I'm Jonquilyn Hill, in for Jen White. This is 1A. Oak Flat is about 4,300 acres of desert landscape in Arizona's Tonto National Forest, about an hour east of Phoenix. For the Apache, it's a sacred religious and cultural site. The area also holds a massive copper deposit. And in 2014, Congress gave part of Oak Flat to one of the world's largest copper mining companies.
Oak Flat means so much to me, and I want to pass down my story to my children and have them have the option to have their sunrise dance where their mother had it, where their grandmother had it.
Chichilbethagathil doesn't only belong to the Apache people or other tribes. It belongs to Nago Sun, Mother Earth.
We're all going to one day have kids of our own, and we want to teach them. We want to show them what it is to be Apache. We want to show them that you can pick the acorn, that you can pick the tocojan. And that's the thing about our Apache way of life. It's all through physically teaching someone or by speaking orally and telling those traditions. And when Oak Flat's destroyed, it's another congressional act of genocide that says that Apache people and Apache religion does not matter.
That was Najoni, Bashe, and Nalin Pike speaking at a virtual rally in December. 1 month later, a grassroots nonprofit called Apache Stronghold sued the federal government. They argue that the deal violates their religious freedom protections. Oak Flat's fate now rests with the Ninth Circuit Court in California. They heard oral arguments on Friday, but it could be months before a decision is reached. What does this case mean for other sacred sites across the country? And what does it tell us about religious freedom and who it applies to? Joining us now from Arizona is Terry Rambler, chairman of the San Carlos Apache Tribe. Chairman Rambler, welcome.
Good morning.
Kristen Carpenter is with us, too. She's the Council Tree Professor of Law and the Director of the American Indian Law Program at the University of Colorado. Professor Carpenter, welcome.
Good morning.
And joining us from Flagstaff is Professor Karen Jarrett Snyder. She's Choctaw, and she's chair of the Applied Indigenous Studies Program at Northern Arizona University. Professor Jarrett Snyder, welcome.
Good morning.
Professor Carpenter, let's start with you. We heard a little bit of the background, but where does the fight over Oak Flat stand right now?
Well, I think the picture is that the United States is trying to figure out whether the protections of the First Amendment and religious freedom will apply to American Indians and to the Apache people in particular. The court, the Ninth Circuit, as you said, most recently heard an appeal from the denial of an injunction where the Apache people had tried to stop the transfer of the land, which was earlier denied by the federal district court this year. And so Apache Stronghold appealed that decision to the Ninth Circuit. And as you said, we're waiting for that decision. At the same time, there are other related actions in the Department of Agriculture, which oversees the Forest Service, rescinded the environmental impact statement mm-hmm. in order to consult with the tribes more fully. And in Congress, Representative Grijalva has introduced legislation to save Oak Flat. So there are a number of measures trying to save this sacred place, but none of them has fully succeeded yet.
Chairman Rambler, tell us more about Oak Flat. Why is it important to you, and why is it important to the San Carlos Apache tribe?
Oh, thank you. My name's Terry Rambler. I'm the chairman of the San Carlos Apache tribe, located in southeastern Arizona. There's about 17,000 of us on about approximately 1.8 million acre of land, both forests and desert environment. It's a beautiful area. The reason that Oak Flat is important to us, and not only San Carlos Apaches, but other Apaches and other tribes, not only in Arizona, but the United States, is that the Oak Flat represents faith to us, a faith that we walk today, that we have always walked for time immemorial, and that we will continue to walk. It's our connection to our Creator God. And it's, some have said, that we walk by faith and not by sight. And that's so true here, because this is a place of faith. That's what it is. That's what it comes down to. Either you believe it or you don't believe it. We believe it. It's a place of faith. There are other places of faith where you'll see people go into a church building, whether it's made out of stone or wood or other material. And of their churches, they usually have a temple or a special place where they call it a temple, a sacred place. And that's no different here with Oak Flat. We don't have a building. We don't have a structure. But our faith, our connection to our Creator God is through the natural environment that He had provided us. There are springs there. There are certain places in there that are really very holy. And our people have used that connection. We have holy ground ceremonies there. We still have our coming of age young woman sunrise dance ceremonies there. It has always been there. The Oak Flat is on the national, it's registered on the National Historic Places, Cultural Property. And the reason it is because they have identified that this is probably the one place where you see a lot of footprints of Apaches. And that's why it's so important to us.
What would it mean to have a copper mine on that land?
It would be no different than having a copper mine on the Mormon temple or any other denomination, their most holy site, to have a copper mine on there. That's what it would mean.
I want to note that we reached out to Resolution Copper and they didn't make anyone available. They sent a statement that we'll get to a bit later on in the program. Apache Stronghold is a grassroots nonprofit that brought this case against the federal government to stop the land transfer. Here's their lawyer, Luca Goodrich, speaking during oral arguments on Friday.
We're talking about the survival of Apaches as a people. There are many tribes that have been extinguished. And the ceremonies that they pass on from generation to generation at Oak Flat is a key aspect of what keeps them in existence as a people.
They specifically point to the Religious Freedom Restoration Act to make their case. Professor Carpenter, what is the Religious Freedom Restoration Act?
Thank you. So in 2000, Congress passed a law providing that the government shall not substantially burden a person's exercise of religion. And the only exception is when the government can demonstrate that that's in furtherance of a compelling governmental interest. And this act was passed in response to a number of Supreme Court cases that in the 60s, 70s, and 80s had diminished protections for religious freedom under the First Amendment, including in American Indian cases. And so Congress, taking the sense of the nation and advocacy by many religious groups, restored what we call the substantial burden compelling interest test for exercise of religion. And so there have been a number of cases involving religions across the board in which the Supreme Court has expansively protected those religious exercises under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, or RFRA, which should also apply in this case.
How has this act and argument been used in cases about culturally significant indigenous sites in particular in the past?
Right. So the claim is that when the federal government purports to destroy an American Indian sacred site, which is what's at stake here, the copper mine would, as Resolution Copper and the federal government have conceded, the copper mine would fully destroy the sacred place. And so tribes have argued that it would burden their religion, to say the least, to have their sacred place destroyed. And so therefore, the burden should pass to the federal government to show that it has a compelling interest in destroying the religion. So in this case, if the Apaches are able to show that they have a substantial burden caused by the mine, it will fall on the federal government to show there's some legitimate reason to destroy this religion. And it's hard to imagine what that legitimate reason would be.
Mm. Professor Jarrett Snyder, what exactly would the impact of this copper mine be on the land? What would it do to the land?
Well, the environmental impact statement indicates that the mining company intends to use a block and cave method to mine the copper ore, and that they expect the land to eventually subside or fall, if you will. It's going to fall in approximately 1,000 feet. So the site, Oak Flat, will, much of it will be destroyed entirely as it is today.
Arizona isn't the only place where battles like this are happening. What does this case or could this case mean for indigenous communities looking to protect sacred land? Professor Jarrett Snyder, I'll put this question to you.
Well, I think there are 4 points to consider here. The first is that for indigenous peoples, spiritual and religious practices are land-based and site-specific, which makes them fundamentally different than most major religious practices of other faiths. And that sacred places for indigenous peoples, because of the result of hundreds of years of shifts in federal Indian policy and land cessions, sacred places for indigenous peoples are part of their traditional homelands, but now within the jurisdiction of federal lands or public lands. And so that puts them in conflict in some cases. And then there's a long history of religious discrimination against indigenous peoples in the United States. Religious practices, of indigenous peoples weren't even recognized as religions by the U.S. until the 1880s, and then it was for the purpose of banning them, and they were banned until the 1930s. And then, as scholar Vindaloria Jr. and others have noted, when there is conflict over protecting an indigenous people's religious site, that involves property rights. And religious freedom is a human right, remember. So when it's property rights versus human rights of indigenous peoples, property rights almost always prevail. And so the law has really failed indigenous peoples. Where it protects religious freedom of other peoples, it's really failed indigenous peoples. And so Native peoples are now learning that they have a better chance of protecting their sacred places by using other means, such as environmental laws through the National Environmental Policy Act, or demonstrating environmental justice claims, using sometimes the National Historic Preservation Act, traditional cultural properties, which has, in this case, is not going to help because of this Midnight Rider Act of Congress, and even pursuing inherent rights of nature, as the Maori people in New Zealand recently have had some success. And the reality, as I said, is that the courts and the law have failed indigenous peoples when it comes to protecting their religious freedom rights. Mm. And we don't see that changing in the future anytime soon.
What is the Midnight Rider? How did this land transfer come about?
Well, it was inserted into the Defense Appropriations Act of 2015, and at the last minute, lots of things get inserted into defense appropriation bills because no one's going to hold up the defense appropriation funding, right? So that's not uncommon. Acts of Congress had been introduced, or legislation, I should say, had been introduced in previous years to try and make this land exchange go through. Freestanding individual legislation called the Southeast Land Exchange Act, and began with former Arizona Congressman Rick Rinsey. And the San Carlos Apache people and others had successfully lobbied against that legislation. And then finally, it was snuck into the Defense Appropriations Act. And as I said, folks aren't going to hold up the Defense Appropriations Bill at the last minute.
Chairman Rambler, Apache Stronghold includes a lot of groups that want to protect Oak Flat, including some people from your tribe. How do you feel about their religious freedom argument?
Well, here's what it says in the Constitution of the United States, the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Now, what the Apache Stronghold's position, you know, is a position of a lot of tribes across the United States, is the protection of our way of life, because that's what the freedom of religion is. It's no different than other religions in the United States. It's a way of life for our people. And so my job as a chairman is to protect that, whether it's the Lutheran religion, the Mormon religion, the Catholic religion, or the traditional people that still practice the Apache way of life. So my job is to protect that. And I support the Apache Stronghold in what they're doing. In their court case, theirs is one court case. There's also two other court cases. One is the San Carlos Apache Tribe, and that case is stayed pending the Forest Service's publication of a future FEIS statement. Mm-hmm. And also there's another case, Arizona Mining Reform Coalition, that is also stayed for the same reason, pending the final publication of a future FEIS. On the environmental impact statement, if I might add this.
We can go ahead and get that right after this break. We're discussing how the First Amendment could help with indigenous people protecting sacred sites with Terry Rambler of the San Carlos Apache Tribe, Professor Kristen Carpenter of the University of Colorado, and Professor Karen Jarrett Snyder of the University of Northern Arizona University. I'm Jonquin Hill. We'll hear more from you and our guests in a moment. Let's get back to talking about Oak Flat and indigenous religious freedom with Chairman Terry Rambler of the San Carlos Apache Tribe, Professor Kristen Carpenter, the Council Tree Professor of Law and the Director of the American Indian Law Program at the University of Colorado, and Professor Karen Jarrett Snyder, the Chair of the Applied Indigenous Studies Program at Northern Arizona University. Rio Tinto, a parent company of Resolution Copper, sent us a statement that says in part, quote, Native American tribes have considerably influenced the project approach, including reducing the land exchange area, placing the culturally significant Apache Leap under the permanent protection, and implementing an Emery Oak conservation program, end quote. You can read their full statement on our website, the1a.org. Oak Flat isn't the only culturally significant site where tribes and environmental groups are protesting mining plans. We also got this message from Paula about a controversial pipeline expansion.
In northern Minnesota, there's been an ongoing protest with regard to Line 3 that's running under the Mississippi River through protected lands, treaty lands of the Anasazi tribe, and going through those protected lands onto Lake Superior. The Biden administration has failed to put an end to this, but it is something that's very detrimental to that tribe and their land and their crops.
Thanks for that message, Paula. Professor Carpenter, how many sites like Oak Flat are there in the U.S.?
It's hard to say exactly how many there are, but there are several prominent cases: a proposed lithium mine on Western Shoshone lands in Nevada, a gold and zinc mine on Menominee lands in Michigan. And of course, there was the infamous case at Standing Rock, where tribes are still contesting an oil pipeline through Lake Oahe and the Missouri River. What these places have in common, and I think Professor Jarrett Snyder made this point, is that these are sites within the traditional lands of tribes, but the federal government has come to claim ownership over them and is using those ownerships in a way that would destroy the religious practices. So again, I don't have an exact number, but this is a recurring problem.
Professor Jarrett Snyder, can you talk a little bit about Standing Rock? It's a reservation, and Oak Flat is a federally owned national forest. What role does that distinction play in all of this?
Well, it does make a difference in that part of the pipeline issue with Dakota Access crosses lands that are still under the jurisdiction of a federally recognized tribe, whereas the Oak Flat area is outside the current jurisdictional area of the San Carlos Apache tribe. However, I would like to say that in the case before the Ninth Circuit now, Apache Stronghold was talking about the treaty and how this is a violation of the treaty, and whether or not the court accepts that argument will be key to the case. But when we talk about treaty rights, it's important to note that as early as 1905, the U.S. Supreme Court said that treaties are not a grant of rights to Indians, but a grant of rights from them. Mm. And in the 1905 case, U.S. versus Wenins, the court said, made that distinction and said that there's a reservation of rights not explicitly ceded. That's come to be known as the reserved rights doctrine. So just because something is outside the current jurisdiction, if there's a treaty with the U.S., it doesn't mean the tribe has no rights at all, necessarily. But in the case of Standing Rock, at issue, one of the things that is at issue is Lake Oahe and the pipeline going underneath it and some contamination that could occur. And there already have been spills in this pipeline, and Dakota Access is facing fines, right? Mm-hmm. And so what really went wrong with Dakota Access was the starting point. And the starting point is when a federal agency is about to undertake an action, in this case, the Army Corps of Engineers granting permits to Dakota Access, they have to, because of the National Environmental Policy Act, undertake an environmental assessment. An environmental assessment is different than an environmental impact statement. Mm-hmm. Environmental assessment is a much, it's a beginning place, right? And if they find the potential for significant impacts, that triggers an environmental impact statement, which is a full interdisciplinary environmental review. Or they can decide that they don't see any potential significant impacts and come out with what's called a finding of no significant impact. And that's what the Army Corps of Engineers initially did. And that's where things started to go wrong. And as you can tell by the tribes' protests, and there's more than one tribe involved, mm-hmm. More than one federally recognized indigenous nation here involved, there clearly are significant impacts. And so as the case wound its way through the courts, they've been ordered to undergo a full environmental review. Unfortunately, Dakota Access just petitioned the Supreme Court to have that latest court order for full environmental impact statement overturned. Mm-hmm.
Jeremy,
so what happens?
Jeremy wrote to us on Facebook and said, imagine the uproar if a mining company wanted to mine under, say, Arlington National Cemetery, or drill for oil in a way that would cause sinkholes under Liberty University. This is a perpetuation of the long history of unspoken deference to Christianity over other religions and of the breaking of treaties which have become unprofitable. Professor Carpenter, what does the Oak Flat case tell us about the way religious freedom laws are applied to indigenous sacred sites versus other religious sites?
Right. Well, I think Jeremy makes some great points with respect to analogy. And as a matter of equality, it's certainly the case that American Indian sites should be eligible for at least the same level of protection as others, churches, mosques, temples, and so on, as Chairman Rambler said. Unfortunately, the existing state of the law and the Supreme Court's decision in Ling versus Northwest Indian Cemetery Association of 1988, that's the major precedent here, simply doesn't afford American Indians the same level of protection for their religious sites and practices. And looking at this matter optimistically, I think there's an opportunity for the courts and Congress and the executive branch to really bring religious freedoms jurisprudence into the modern era with respect to American Indians and up to global standards, which recognize that Indigenous peoples do have the right to religious freedom and to protect their sacred sites, for example, under the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. These are basic principles, they're basic human rights, and it is really time for the United States to catch up to the rest of the world and also to recognize American Indian religious freedoms here at home.
This all started with a law by Congress in 2015 saying they'd transfer the land, and according to the Biden administration's argument, that means only Congress can stop it.
The problem ultimately is that the government's hands are tied by the statute with regard to whether it's going to transfer this land and whether this area is going to be destroyed. Those two things are going to happen. There's no way you can mediate your way out of that. I suppose you could agree that there was a RFRA violation and override the statute, okay. But that would have to be what you would have to do.
Yeah, which we are unable to do because of the lack of coercive action on their exercise.
This is a situation where it would be nice if Congress or somebody would make more sense out of this.
And Congress is the only entity that can provide relief here.
That was Judge Marsha Berzon going back and forth with Department of Justice lawyer Joan Pepin on Friday. Pepin is representing the U.S. government in the Apache Stronghold lawsuit. And again, RFRA is the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Chairman Rambler, is Congress ultimately responsible for this?
Yes, they are. They're the ones that enacted this law back in 2015. From 25 to 2015, we successfully, with the help of Congress, prevented this law from taking place. But as it was explained earlier, it was tucked into the NDAA midnight hour. And so what people don't really point out is that within this Southeastern Arizona Land Exchange Act, there's a lot of talk about consultation, but in there it says that once this FEIS is published within 60 days, I believe it was, that this land will be turned over to Resolution Copper, or just it'll be a private land thereafter. And so, but before that happens, Congress right now has an opportunity to do justice, to undo something that they did in 2015, and that's in the budget reconciliation process. Right now, the Save Oak Flat Act is part of the budget reconciliation process that was approved by the House. So once both chambers get together, and if they pass it as is, then that will repeal the Southeastern Arizona Land Exchange Act. And this is an opportunity for Congress to do one act that will help with the injustice of over the years of how we have been treated. So I'm hoping that our congressman, our representative, Tom O'Halloran, and our two senators, Senator Sinema and Senator Kelly, will stand with us on this issue and publicly state their position and tell their House and Senate leadership that they support Saving Oak Flat Act and that let it continue to be in the budget reconciliation process so that this law, this really bad law that was implemented in 2015, can be reversed.
I want to note that we did invite Resolution Copper to join this conversation. Again, they didn't make anyone available, but they did send a statement, and you can read that full statement on our website, the1a.org. Professor Carpenter, we mentioned there's a bill in Congress that would repeal the land transfer to Resolution Mining. How is that looking right now? Are we likely to see this?
I've been so pleased to see the bill make it out of its first committee review, and I hope that it will proceed just in the fashion that Chairman Rambler has indicated, with the support of Arizona representatives and senators. It would both withdraw this land from mining and repeal the current land transfer. I would like to say, however, that I'm not entirely sure that the government is correct when it says only Congress can fix this situation. The Ninth Circuit does have the opportunity to strike down this Land Transfer Act as unconstitutional in violation of the First Amendment and as in violation of RFRA, as we just discussed. It is the role of the courts to interpret the law. This law violates Apache religious freedom, and it should be struck down.
Professor Carpenter, what do you hope changes about the way Congress and the U.S. judicial system as a whole deals with the way they interact with indigenous sacred sites?
A few things. First of all, I think there's basic respect and equality that American Indian sacred sites must be afforded the same level of protection as the sacred places of other religions. Secondarily, this requirement to consult with tribes needs to become not just an empty gesture. When the federal government discharges its obligation to consult, it must then listen to the tribes and hear them when they say their religions, their very existence is at stake. Best standards require the negotiation of mutual agreements. And this is what we should see in this case. The federal government sitting down with San Carlos and other tribes and developing an agreement with respect to how this sacred land, Oak Flat, should be treated consistent with religious freedoms.
What about you, Professor Jarrett Snyder? What do you hope changes?
Well, I agree with Professor Carpenter. It's time for the United States to afford indigenous peoples the same respect for their sacred and religious places as they do other religious sites in the country. And it's important. We should all worry when the courts and the Congress fail to uphold free exercise of religion protection for indigenous peoples. Today, it's their rights that are vanishing, and whose will it be tomorrow?
Professor Carpenter, what's next for the Apache Stronghold case? Do we know when we could see a decision?
I imagine it'll be a couple of months, as you said, and this is only on the temporary injunction. We still probably will see litigation on the merits going forward unless Congress or the executive branch figure out a resolution, as I think the court would like to see.
That was Professor Kristen Carpenter, the Council Tree Professor of Law and the Director of American Indian Law Program at the University of Colorado. We also spoke with Professor Karen Jarrett Snyder. She's Choctaw, and she chairs the Applied Indigenous Studies Program at Northern Arizona University. And Chairman Terry Rambler of the San Carlos Apache Tribe. Thanks to you all. And a reminder to subscribe to the 1A podcast. It's where you'll find our best guests and stories of the day. Today's producer was Katie Anastas, with help from Amanda Williams. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jonquilin Hill. Let's talk more soon. This is 1A.